Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Hi, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio. Indeed, it's nice to have you with us. I am Doug Llewellyn. And, you know, I love doing these programs because we talk to all kinds of people about all kinds of subjects. Some of them are absolutely, truly fascinating. I think this is going to be one of those half hours, and I encourage you to stand by. I was going to say, you can sit by. That'll be fine. Because I know you're going to find this interesting. We're going to be talking about guns and testimony involving the use of guns in court cases and how important it is. Let me just present a scenario to you. There's a defendant who's been charged in a capital murder case, and he insists he did not pull the trigger, the gun. He says the gun must have malfunctioned or discharged on his own accord. And his freedom, by the way, will depend on whether the jury believes him or not. There is one really key case in the media right now that I'm sure you're all familiar with that this could be involved with. But in any event, attorneys in both civil and criminal cases are often faced with questions that go way beyond the simple mechanical operation of a firearm. And that's why finding a qualified expert witness is really critical to the outcome of the case. Our guest today is exactly that. His name is David Lombardo, and he is a court-qualified expert witness in the design, the maintenance, the operation, and the levels of force relating to the use of firearms for personal protection. And as David points out, there are very few attorneys around who know much about firearms. And as an expert witness, his job is to know more about that case than anybody else in order to help the attorney know the right questions to ask. Firearm-related cases have a real strong emotional element, no doubt about that. And Lombardo's testimony not only has to inform the court of the facts surrounding the issues in simple, easy-to-understand language so that juries can understand, but also counteract the emotional element. That's the critical part. As an expert witness, he helps attorneys maximize the best case scenario for their clients. He has a background in counseling and psychotherapy, as well as, and this is amazing, 2 years at Chicago's famed Second City. Lombardo has a unique flair for really being able to persuade juries. He says a lot of people are experts at subjects, but the question is just how good are you that you can convince the jury that the facts you tell them really are the truth. And the reason you pay a lot of money to somebody like him to be an expert witness is not simply because he understands the problem, it's because he understands what to do and how to convince people that it's the right thing. He's the founder and the president of an organization, actually a company, called Safer USA Consulting Group. They have a great website with a lot of valid information on it. And SAFER stands for Second Amendment Foundation for Education and Research. And indeed, all of Lombardo's work flows from his passion for the Second Amendment. He says the republic is run by citizens, and if you disarm the citizen, you no longer have a republic. You have authoritarian rule. And, of course, that's where it gets difficult. There are people saying it should be totally unfettered. He believes with privilege comes responsibility. He offers his expertise to defendants and plaintiffs alike in both civil and criminal litigation. And David adds that whether you are guilty or not guilty, everybody has a right to be told the truth at trial. And he also works with local governments to develop shooting range ordinances. He conducts indoor and outdoor range safety audits, and he provides management consulting and strategic planning for shooting clubs. So he has a remarkable background. He does a lot in an amazing area, and obviously his participation in court cases can be very, very valuable for whichever side, you know, whether it's the plaintiff's side or the defendant's side that's asked him to come aboard. So let's welcome David. He's based in Sherwood, Illinois, and it's cold in Sherwood, Illinois today, as it is in many parts of the U.S. Good morning, David. Nice to have you with us. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Doug, but I'm cold.
You're cold. Well, welcome aboard. We're all cold. Let's warm things up. This is a really great subject to talk about, And the first thing that really pops out when you talk about your background is your experience with Second City. And, you know, Second City is known for creating some of the best comedians and comedy actors we've had in years. That's what's great about Second City. Did you originally plan to go into show business? Was that why you spent time there? Tell me about it.
Well, actually, most of my life, as a younger man, I was in a lot of community theater, regional theater. I did that. And in mm-hmm. the 90s, I sort of burned out in what I was doing, and I decided I was going to switch over and have a career as an actor, and I did. I did film, television, and industrials and all of that, and I just gravitated towards Second City because I have a bizarre sense of humor, and I loved it there. I spent 2 years there, and it was wonderful. It was absolutely great.
Well, it's an outstanding organization, no question about that. Let me ask you this. How does that background help you in what you're doing now and trying to convince juries of what you're there to tell them?
It's interesting. They have a program that they offer, a one-year program that they offer. And a lot of lawyers take the first part of it because it's about improvisation. It's not about comedy, although everybody that goes there is interested in, you know, doing comedy. But it's about right. improvisation, which can be very serious. And the improvisation is listening. When we're talking, you and I, it's very common for the person speaking to be talking to a person who's thinking about what he's going to say next and not really paying attention to you. What Second City teaches you is listen to what they're saying and then react to it.
Okay. I totally understand that. And you're right. So that's what helped you. Obviously, it has helped you a lot, your experience there. Let me ask you this. What led you into the direction of what you're doing right now? They, you know, on the surface, they don't seem to be connected at all. Let's get into that.
It's I like to think of it as having an eclectic past. It sounds better. You know, Uncle Sam taught me to shoot in 1966. I joined the Army and volunteered to go to Vietnam, and I learned to shoot there, and I've just been doing it ever since. And over the years, what happened was people would come to me, and they would go, well, can you teach me how to shoot? And I'd say, sure, I can teach you how to shoot. And, you know, it just kind of got more and more. People were doing that while I was working a full-time job doing something totally different. And one day I had a lawyer asked me if I could teach him to shoot. I said, yeah. And he said, you know, what's your company name? How do I make out the check? And I go, you just make it out to me. I don't have a company. And he looked at me like I was out of my mind. He said, do you have any idea the liability you have teaching somebody to shoot and not being incorporated? And I go, no, I didn't. And he filled me in on it. And so in 2006, I incorporated as Safer USA. And so I've got that coverage. And Safer USA has been with me now since 2006. We've taught over 8,000 students in that period of time.
Wow. When you say you've taught those students, what do you teach them? Safer USA, by the way, it's a great website. Anybody who's listening, interested in the subject, the website for the organization is guntestimony.com. guntestimony.com. But if you go there and look, you'll see Safer USA Consulting Group specializes in consulting and expert testimony involving firearms, lethal force, training, and range operations. That's pretty, you know, it's really an amazing it's amazing what you're providing, the information you're providing. So talk to me about it. What basically do you do?
Safer USA has become an umbrella, really. Safer USA started out just as a shooting school in 2006, and now it really is an umbrella for a number of things. We still have the shooting school called Safer USA. We have expert witness and consulting work that falls under it. I'm a journalist. I was a journalist. And when I retired, I didn't stop writing. I just started writing about this subject instead. And then I run a nonprofit, 501c3, and then we have On Target Radio Show on AM 560 in Chicago, the number one conservative talk radio station in Chicago. So all of those things fall under Safer USA.
Okay. And on the radio show, what do you do on the radio show? What's that about? Explain it to me.
Well, it started out as a gun show, and it was hard to find sponsors. So it morphed over. And basically what we do now is our tagline is, we talk about the red meat issues that affect your life from, Second Amendment to the First Amendment to anything that strikes my fancy. And it's there's three of us now. We grow. We do live guests. We have call-ins. But basically it's a conservative talk show, and pretty much anything that catches our attention, we'll look into it. We've got certain bugaboos, of course. Second Amendment issues is big because all of us were ex-cops, and all of us are very, very conservative. So, we look at it from that frame of reference. But we do all sorts of things. I mean, robots is it sounds crazy, but we've done a lot about artificial intelligence and robots. That makes a few of the people on the show freak. And
right.
We are very plugged into politics. So we have a lot of guests on who are – political candidates and that, that sort of individual.
Well, that sounds like, you involve a lot of other things that really go beyond the scope of what Safer USA does. Your primary thing that we wanted to talk about here and focus on, which I think is so important, is helping, lawyers involving in cases involving guns and how your testimony comes into play in those cases. So explain that aspect of what you do. And it looks like you have a group of lawyers or consultants that help you out. At least that's the impression one gets when you look at your website. Bunch of nice looking guys there. Tell me about.
Well,
okay.
We have, I don't know everything about firearms, and there are areas of expertise that are not really familiar to me. So they're sort of, auxiliary people. I have a group of auxiliary type people who, if I have a case that involves, let's say, for instance, I have a case that literally involves a bullet. The question is the projectile itself and one of ballistics. Well, that's not really an area of expertise. So I have somebody that you can call and you can talk to them. And the sort of arrangement we have, one of the issues when you retain an expert witness is you have to give them a retainer. We want, a retainer fee up front. And in the case of a lot of these people, they'll just do it for their hourly rate. You don't have to pay a retainer to use them if it's a simple question that they need answered and need somebody to testify to. So I do have a list of people who have expertise in areas that I don't have, and that's basically what it's about.
Okay. But you get involved in cases that have involved guns. And I mean, let's face it, the most prominent one anybody would be thinking about right now, the story that's been in the news, was the case involving Alec Baldwin and the making of the motion picture Rust that they were doing, I think it was down in Arizona or New Mexico, in any event where, the director of the film was shot by a gun that was being held by Alec Baldwin. And I understand, I don't know, the sheriff there has asked for Baldwin to give his telephone to them. I don't know if he has or not yet. I don't think he has. But he claims he didn't pull the trigger, yet the gun went off. It killed the director and injured the cinematographer as well. This is a case that would be obviously, it would tailor-made for your kind of testimony. Wouldn't that be right?
Well, I originally, when I first heard it, I go, man, I'd like to score the Baldwin case. I personally don't like Alec Baldwin. He's virulently anti-Second Amendment, and so we're on opposite sides of the thing. And I find it somewhat disgusting, however, that there are people who say, well, he's getting his comeuppance. And I think that's, I feel sorry for him. I don't like him, but I feel sorry for him. Because this is something he'll have to live with for the rest of his life, and I just wouldn't wish that on anybody. But this whole thing, it was the cinematographer that got killed, Helena Hutchins, and Joel Souza is the director, and Souza was wounded. The round went through her and hit him. This whole thing.
He died. She died. The director died.
No, she died.
Yeah.
The
cinematographer said she died.
Yeah, yeah. Cinematographer died, and the director was hit, but
right.
It was not life-threatening. the thing about this is it gets more convoluted by the day. It happened by chance that I was on a case about two stuntmen, one who shot another. So I had the Screen Actors Guild safety bulletins for, they got this big, thick book that covers safety protocols for everything from flying an airplane to, you know, handling firearms or whatever. So I just happened that I was very familiar with what the rules are. And on the surface, when I looked at it, I said, Baldwin is just, he didn't do anything wrong. With the original information that was released, I looked at it and I go, I don't see that he did anything wrong. I really don't. He followed, it appeared initially, the protocols. Well, this thing has gotten more bizarre by the day. Now, you have somebody, a woman named Mamie Mitchell, who's a script supervisor, who's suing him, claiming that he discharged a firearm when there wasn't even one supposed to be in that scene. You don't know who to believe and what really happened at this point. It's become that convoluted. So it's hard to say. He's being sued by several different people. There's several different types of claims. I don't know how they're going to sort it all out, to be honest with you.
Well, the key question here, and you're right, we can't do this on, you know, right now because we don't know all the facts. But anyway, Baldwin has claimed he did not pull the trigger, yet the gun
right.
went off. So they wouldn't a case like that be one ideally suited for someone like you or your organization to come in and testify as to whether the gun could have gone off without touching the trigger or what could have possibly happened to make the gun go off to either if depending on what side you're on, the plaintiff or the litigant, when you're, you know, to convince the jury that, yeah, your position there is right. The gun could have gone out without pulling the trigger, or you can convince the jury that, hey, the gun could not have gone off without pulling the trigger, one way or the other. Wouldn't that be the ideal for you?
You know, it's a fact-based issue. So it was a single-action revolver. And it's a little complicated, probably not worth going into now, but if you have the trigger pulled part, see, the problem with this type of firearm, to be able to load unload it, to be able to turn the cylinder by hand, you have to cock the hammer back part way, which means you got to hold the trigger a little bit. And so theoretically, he could have had his finger on the trigger doing what you were supposed to do, and then let go of the hammer accidentally to discharge the gun. It's tricky, and it's so dependent on what type of a firearm you're handling. There's different types of actions, they call them, things that make the firearm work, and the moving parts. And it depends on what type of gun you have as to what could happen. One of the areas that I specialize in is human factors, which years ago, before we became politically correct, we called the man-machine interface. But literally, there's issues that revolve around, is the gun the proper size to fit your hand? If not, that can be. I had a murder case that literally hinged on the fact that the gun was the wrong size for the person's hand. So all that is kind of complicated, but you can sort it out if you get the facts. With Baldwin, it's hard to say at this point.
I mean, yeah, I know there's so many different theories going around, and of course the big question is, how did a live round get on the movie set to begin with? It should
That's
never have been
it.
There.
Absolutely.
You know, there's so many factors. But let's talk about a case that you were involved in, and you testified before a jury, and what happened. Give me an example, okay?
Well, I can just tell you how the process itself works. What literally happens is this. I get a phone call, and I will tell you that I'm very careful to try and balance. I try to have an equal number of civil and criminal cases, an equal number of plaintiff and defendant cases. And the reason why is the first thing they do when you sit in the witness chair is they try and discredit you. And, for instance, typically, not always, but typically plaintiffs have more money than defendants do. And so if you have all plaintiff cases, they immediately paint you as, you know, somebody who you're in it for the money and that kind of thing. So I try and keep a balance. But the way it essentially works is a lawyer will contact me, and the first thing they want to know if there is a trial date already set, is are you available on these days? If you're not, end the discussion. Then if you are, they're gonna try and look at what is your expertise and how does it pertain to these issues. And if that balances out at that point, they give you sort of an outline of what happened. Now, this is really kind of tricky. They'll tell you the elements of the case, but if they tell you too much, then that precludes you from working for the other side. For instance, if they don't hire you, the other side might give you a call. But if you got too much information from the one side, you can't work for the other side. There are actually some attorneys, unscrupulous attorneys, and it doesn't happen often. They'll look at who are the big players in the game, and they'll call and hire one of them. Then they'll call the other one, and they'll act like they want to hire them, give them all sorts of information, which precludes them from working for the other side, and then not hire them. So basically, they're hamstring their opponent is what they're doing. That doesn't happen often, but it can. Now, from there, once you get a basic idea, you tell them what you think. And this is where people, you know, I've had people say, you would defend a criminal. I don't see it as I actually defend anyone. And you said it in the opening. I believe that everybody has a right to have the truth told at their trial, whether they're innocent or guilty, at least as I understand it to be. So at that point, I tell them what I think, and they either hire me or they don't. I don't massage what I say based on the case. I tell them what I think of the facts. I don't always get hired because it doesn't go along with what they need. At that point, once you get that, comes the big dump. And it is literally, there are cases like murder cases. I'll get a box. I'll get a crate full of stuff, literally. And then some of them you only get, you know, maybe some handouts. But here's the stuff that you're going to get. Copies of depositions so far, criminal complaints, various legal documents pertaining to the case, photos. I've gotten as many as 200 photos, videos. You got to look at all that stuff and put it together. And I tell clients basically this. In court, truth is irrelevant. The only thing that matters is perception. I'm not saying that's good. I'm just saying that's fact. So you can be telling the truth and just be bad at it, and the perception's bad, or you could be lying through your teeth but being good at it, and the jury buys it as good. So the way you present stuff is important. What I have to do as an expert witness is take this gigantic mass of material and digest it. And I tell people, look, for everything you send me, for every single sheet of paper you send me, figure it's going to take me 2 minutes. Some you don't spend any time at all. But another page, like in a deposition, I might spend a half an hour going over it, and I'll say, well, Bob said this here, but I remember in this other document, Bob said that, and it's not the same. And that's what you're looking for. You're looking for inconsistencies, and that takes a lot of time, and it's very expensive to do that. Once you get that done, then the case may settle, and you may do nothing, or you may give a deposition. You may do a white paper, write up your position, or you may go to court and testify. But that's sort of how the flow of the thing works.
So you're pointing out you have to do a lot of research if you get involved in a case. You have to know what both sides are saying and what their positions are, because you may notice inconsistencies or things that are totally incorrect and be able to bring that out in the court case. By the way, I wanted to ask you about your ability to convince a jury of what you're testifying to. You know, your experience in the theater world and with Second City. Do you think that has been a big help? Your expertise in improvisation has really helped you in court cases? Has it worked for you? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it really has. There are several things in my background that they're all totally unrelated, except they all kind of come together in doing this. You know, here's the thing. First and foremost, you have to know your audience. Every jury is different. So one of the things about Second City is it teaches you to read, you know, who your partner is. And in this case, it's a jury. You want to always remain positive and friendly. The jury has to like you. If a jury doesn't like you, selling them on anything is next to impossible. You always want to be very careful to explain in common language and understandable terminology. And you know, I'll give you a good example. when you talk about, people call them bullets. They're not bullets. They're actually cartridges. A cartridge is composed of four things. It's got a casing, which is like a drinking cup, and then in the casing you put the gunpowder, and then you put the bullet into that. And then there's a fourth thing, and the fourth thing is called the primer. And what I tell people the primer is, and I've heard horrible definitions of a primer in court, not incorrect, just terrible chemistry and all that stuff. And I make it simple. A primer is a slightly more sophisticated cap gun. It converts mechanical energy into chemical energy. You hit it with a firing pin, just like you hit a cap, and it goes bang, it ignites a fire. That's the chemical part, and that lights the gunpowder. Now, here's the other thing. Being a journalist all those years, words, there are denotation and there is connotation of words. So denotation is the literal or primary meaning of a word. But connotation is the interesting one. Connotation is the idea or the feeling that a word, like, invokes. And so let me give you an example. I'll take the word gritty. So the word gritty means literally like grit. It could be gravel, broken cement, dirt, whatever it is. It's, you know, texturally gritty. However, if you're in court and you say, there's two ways you can say this. You know, Bob went into kind of a bad part of town, or you can say Bob got into a really gritty part of town. That terminology, that use of words imparts a sense of feeling to a jury. It doesn't seem like it would make a difference, but it does. Because I don't know, maybe they watch too much TV. Yeah, so gritty, you know, that's what you do. It's that choice of words that you use, yeah. You're not lying, but what you're doing is projecting a feeling.
Well, it's, you know, what you're doing is fascinating. I could talk to you for an hour or two on this subject. The key thing is there, as we run out of time, are there any cases where your testimony has really helped convince the jury of, you know, the side that had hired you to come in as an expert testimony, for your expert testimony?
Yeah, there's no question about it. I just have a good background in terms of understanding what and how to say things, and it does. There was one monumental failure that to this day haunts me, but basically, yeah, I'm a good writer. I'm a good speaker. I did motivational speaking for years, and I've been very, very successful at it, and I enjoy a good practice.
And obviously you have a thorough knowledge of weaponry, of guns, of all kinds, which is critical, correct?
There are people who know more about guns than I do. But here's the thing. I can go look up the specs on any gun, and basically guns aren't that different. There are a couple of variations in firearms, and then the rest of the variations are the name of the company. So it's not
right.
A real big deal, but I've not had a particular firearm. Doesn't really make a difference, because I can just go look up the specs, and I can tell you if it has a single-action trigger, a double, whatever it is. That's not the big deal. And people have said, you know, wow, you charge a lot of money for something that a lot of people know. And I go, it's true. And there's a lot of people that know more about guns than I do. The question is, do they have the skill to be able to make other people believe them? And that's what you really pay for when you hire an expert witness.
That's exactly right. That's the whole point right there. We've been talking to David Lombardo. He's amazing. He's the founder of Safer USA. If you want to learn more about what Safer USA is all about and what it does, go to their website, guntestimony.com. That's an easy name to remember, everybody, guntestimony.com, and you'll find out all about the company, what they do, and how to get in direct contact with David Lombardo, our guest. David, this is an amazing subject, really fascinating to talk to you, and maybe we can do this again, because I'm sure you got a lot of great stories, but thanks for taking the time to be with us today. I really appreciate it, and good luck to what you're doing. I can see you'd be critical in many, many cases before the judges today. Okay? So thanks for your time, sir. Have a great day. All right?
Thanks, Doug.
You are welcome. Thank you, David.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
That's it for today, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll see you next time.